no request in the last appropriations, special appropriations in Springfield for portal?
No. That'll be part of this appropriations process. At least not that I'm aware of, have you?
No.
It's not been my, that's not my understanding.
I know that the requirement gathering, right now, and we have a colleague on Thursday with the CPO's office, because they're still trying to identify all the agency requirements of everything we'd like to see in this portal, like disclosure, so vendors, you know, if they get a contract with IDOT or another agency, and then say 2 weeks later they submit another proposal, then if they get put through the wringer, we'll probably disclose it for them. So like Christie said, it'd make it easier for us, but also the vendors as well.
So we think that will, you know, help significantly. And we do have regular meetings, and I think we have seen some improvement in the process as far as streamlining goes, so I want to give credit where credit is due. It's just, you know, there are by statute now several more steps that need to be taken, and a lot more outside entities that need to approve something.
Do we mentor these contractors through the process the best we can? Are you allowed to?
Yeah, we do. We certainly go back and forth on, you know, the proper way, at least to our understanding at that point in time, proper way of filling out
right.
the forms and disclosures and, you know, what's expected of them. And I think that, you know, also as the vendor community, you know, last year was a learning process for a lot of them as well. So this year, you know, a lot of people, you know, are more familiar with what the expectations are. And there has been some, you know, on some of the requirements, like the Board of Election certificate, which we talked about before, which used to be a requirement to submit that with the proposal or the bid. You know, now that's something that they just have to be in compliance, but they don't actually have to have a form in their submission. You know, those things have helped as well. Is there anything else you would
add? Well, just, you know, on Paul's side and the consultants especially, when they have contracts with IDOT, you know, they have a different CPO than we have. For construction engineering, they have a totally separate CPO than ours. And, you know, when those firms submit their disclosure forms, as long as they're signing under penalty or perjury, they're pretty much moving all those through. And, you know, when we receive their forms and we put it through our process, they're sending them back, asking several additional questions and vendors. And Paul, I know you hear this all the time where vendors are saying, well, wait a minute, I just entered a contract with IDOT. They didn't ask us for any of this. And so I think it's been challenging for a lot of those firms, but some of them are probably...
Well, I think that goes to this point of even within the process, you know, within a couple month period of time, you know, something, you know, somebody may see something differently or catch something. So I don't know that it's just one versus the other, but it's just even within the process when it's the same person responsible for it, you know, at one point in time something may be acceptable where, you know, they see an issue, you know, the second time something is. So I do think that this vendor portal concept will be helpful. In kind of creating that consistency of expectation. But I think we've all just, I think, decided that this is going to take longer. You know, whatever they do and whatever we implement, the process will take longer than it did
four or five years ago. I know for a fact there's some fairly large road building contractors that are establishing the area again, either have been here before, i.e. Granite, Lane, people like that, who are going to be actively bidding this work, I think, in the next couple of rounds, but haven't gone through the process. So, I mean, if there was some sort of
model,
mentoring or something, so they don't relearn every time we put a new contractor through. You know, the ones we have in the area are now learning the system, but, you know, I think what we strive for is to bring additional contractors in for competitiveness and for maybe a fresh look at some other issues that we have.
Yeah, well, we'll take a look at whether there are some additional trainings. I know that we've done, you know, webinars and other things to try to educate people on the procurement process, but maybe there are some additional things that we can do just as we're ramping up for the season. I think we had anticipated some additional training sessions.
Yeah, I think the CPO even offered to come out and speak to some of our vendors and do some training. The disclosure forms are really one of the aspects of the contract that seems to be unpredictable on how long it's going to take for them to get it into us and get it completed and accepted and reviewed. So this vendor portal, I agree. We recognize that would probably be a very, you know, good improvement to the process and help us, you know, manage things better and make the times more predictable. At least, you know, once we can get them through once a year, we've we'd be good unless, you know, something changed. And so I agree that we need to support the CPO's effort on getting that vendor portal implemented as soon as possible, because I really think that's the most beneficial thing we can do.
We'll tell us how we can help.
Okay, we will. Last but not least, I think we wanted just to do a brief update on 53-120. There's a contract, you know, per the discussion we had with the Strategic Planning Committee, there's a contract on the agenda to advance some corridor planning and design for that effort. So Rocco's going to do a presentation on 53-120.
Good morning again.
Good morning again.
Try to be brief on this one as well. Some updates on a study area for this Illinois Route 53-125. As many of you remember, we did a back mid last year. We wrapped
just
up.
Just for clarification, I think, is this under the Iliana?
It is. Somehow they all end up under the same line.
If you're looking for it on the laptop, sorry,
it's the first one.
I'm sure somehow it was my fault.
No, we don't assign blame.
I'm just used to that.
In my family.
So I'll give you the overview of the study area. This is all tied into with the previous work with the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council, which you may remember we wrapped up last year. Talk about some of the recommendations that came out of that report. We'll talk a little bit about the cost estimate and funding gap for this particular project, some of the next steps in the project timeline moving it forward. So this is the study area for the Route 53-120 project. I'll kind of very briefly walk you through the study area, what we're going to be looking at as part of this next step. It's really starting down here at I-90, the existing Route 53 up to Lake Cook Road is going to be part of the overall evaluation of the project we're trying to put down here. Right now, the existing Route 53 ends right here at Lake Cook Road. It's about 100,000 vehicles a day traveling through this intersection. We'll travel north. The corridor is pretty well defined. The right-of-way is well defined through this north-south stretch of the extension of Route 53. And we'll extend it to the north, or evaluate the extension to the north to a point just south of Illinois Route 120. At 120, we've got a couple different potential options for alignments along the 120 corridor. As you can kind of see, some multiple lines up there on the west side of 120. The evaluation will extend to approximately Route 12 on the west, and then we'll also look at an evaluation tying back into a point somewhere near Route or Interstate 94 on the east side, so to kind of make this the 53-120 project. As I said, right now the current corridor ends right at Lake Cook Road. You may have driven through it at some point in time. It just, there's about 100,000 vehicles a day that all go through this existing corridor. So some of our work that we completed before with the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council, there were some clear recommendations that came out of the Advisory Council. Here's what they are. With the four lane, the desire, and this is a project that, again, had 50 plus years of experience. Many people had an opportunity to work on this one. The recommendation that came out of the council was a four lane, 45 mile per hour parkway. If you may recall also, when we pulled the council together, they were there to do three different things, answer three questions. One, tell us if the tollway should be involved in the project. Two, if we should be involved, what should the project look like? And three, how to finance the project. So two things clearly came out of that analysis is one, yes, there was a desire to move the project forward. It was really a first time, true consensus on the project. There was also consensus of the membership of how the roadway should look, and this is really kind of what it should look like, the four-lane, 45 mile per hour. Some of the key features that we need to really evaluate a little bit more was a depressed roadway option. Was preferred throughout the entire corridor. That would do a few different things. Would set some higher, very high level environmental and performance standards to address runoff, to address some of the water quality issues, and concerns, noise, and salt spray. So those are some of the major issues. There is a very high level of environmental performance standards that were also recommended as part of the overall project. A lot of this is uncharted territory, not just for the Illinois tollway, really, but for national roadways itself. There really isn't anything to draw upon to say what is a four-lane, 45-mile-per-hour toll parkway to run and operate like. So here's where we were, where we left it with the advisory council. We had two different cost estimates based on the alignments that were chosen for that entire stretch. A range from about $2.3 to $2.7 billion, just as a high-level overview of the funding That came just from the tolls alone on the roadway, generated about 360 to 410 million, with a funding gap of in the range of about $2 billion. But there was also some other proposed revenue enhancements that were suggested and recommended that we would look at a little bit more detail, much more detail in this range of the project. In this phase of the project, some of those revenue enhancements included indexing, congestion pricing, local dollars associated with the project through possibilities of value capture, some kind of sales and motor fuel tax, or some TIP or special service area districts. So looking at a more of a range of things to provide some revenue enhancements, these will be things that we'll look at. So the study, there's going to be a contract that's going to be presented to you today really to take this project to the next step, to take some of the recommendations that came out of the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council report and move it forward. But we're not doing this alone. There's also a complementary analysis that's going to be led by Lake County and CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. It's really a corridor-wide land use plan. This roadway is only going to be as only good as the planning that happens along the entire corridor. So it's basically it's including all of the municipalities along the entire corridor to make sure that there is a unified vision that meets and matches this this slimmed down type of a roadway, this 4-lane, 45-mile-per-hour parkway. So there's going to be an expectation that at the end there will be an adoption of a new land use plan by individual communities to align the land use, economic development, and environmental protections with the vision of the roadway. So that's going to be a complementary thing that goes on with CMAP and Lake County will obviously be deeply involved with that process. But then we're going to be doing our own pre-concept feasibility study. That's what's going to be coming to you today for an engineering contract. It's really developing looking at the engineering and cost estimates that were done before, doing a refinement of all those, looking at what it really means to have those performance standards, not just from a cost aspect, but what is it going to take to maintain and operate some of these high level of performance standards on our system. Again, this is something new, so getting a better understanding of the maintenance and operation costs. Something unique that we'll be doing with this project as well, we'll be doing some kind of a survey of customers' willingness to pay, an evaluation of the broader roadway network, understanding what the travel times are, what the benefits will be of having it, this type of parkway design, looking at those travel time savings and assessing some value of time work and to get some feedback from those who would be likely traveling on the roadway. So that'll be something different. We'll be also looking really at the right-of-way. I know we've got that was one of the question marks in our analysis that we did previously. We defined generally what the right-of-way would be. The north-south is pretty clear-cut. But with some of this depressed roadway that we need to further define what the right-of-way will be needed for the entire corridor with having depressed roadway. We're looking at interchange design and configuration of the interchanges and what those crossroad impacts would be. So those are going to be some of the other things. We'll also be doing a lot of work regarding how to finance the project. Like I said, we answer those two questions of should the tolling be involved and how should it look. But we're really going to spend a lot of time on looking at how to finance the project. This is a critical a piece of every project. So we've got right now a fairly significant funding gap. So we'll be pulling together a group to really focus on the financing aspects of this particular project as well. And then also some of the other recommendations that came out of the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council is to look at what other types of local, state, and federal authorizations would be required to advance a project such as this. There's a lot of things that we need to consider since it is so unique and new. The overall timeline, here's where we are today. We've already wrapped up the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council report. We're going to bring this item to the board today. We'll be getting started sometime. Once we get a notice to proceed, anticipated sometime in April of this year. So it'll be overall about an 18-month process. We will continue to come back to the Strategic Planning Committee to provide some updates on the project. We'll be initiating some of these customer surveys, likely sometime this summer. As I said, coming back to the Strategic Planning Committee and probably about summer 2014 with some recommendations regarding how to finance the project, so that's going to be a lot of time spent there. And then sometime, say, fall, winter of 2014, so about a year and a half from now, we'll have to make some decisions on where to take this project. So that's it. As I said, there is a contract that is in your agenda today for consideration for approval. Any questions?
I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to say I think, you know, that this is very important that we move ahead on this, and perhaps even more so than in a typical case, in that, you know, there are design features incorporated by consensus of the folks that were involved in putting this whole project together. And they create some unique elements to the whole project, and those elements obviously have some cost. And then at the same time, one of those features is a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit. So I think it's going to be especially important here to kind of figure out, given what might perhaps be considered unique costs and given the speed limit that they're talking about, what that project will bear, what that road will bear in terms of tolling or whatever, in terms of generating revenue to pay those costs. It's the demand schedule under those circumstances is going to be a pretty important thing to understand, so we can figure out, you know, exactly what you're talking about and that is feasibility. So I look forward to some of the results that come out of this.
I just would underscore, I think that's a really, really important ability, is to take the recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Committee and their strategic ideas and their design and make sure that we're being responsible in terms of the way that fits within the financial plan. What we don't want to do is create a road that's not going to be able to be sustained, or to launch into a project that's not going to work. So I don't think there's anybody who, or as far as I know, there's no one who has an objection to the concept and the design. I think everybody's actually very excited about it. And I think everyone involved in this has done a superb job of supporting the Blue Ribbon Committee, but we have a responsibility now to make sure that it's going to work.
And I think that's why we're putting an emphasis on this willingness to pay type survey, getting an understanding that the broader, if you build a four-lane, 45-mile-per-hour, you know you're going to take some traffic off of the existing roadways. There are parallel roadways, relatively close. Are people really, what's your value of time? Those parallel roadways, as anybody drives up there knows, they're extremely congested. You can't get around. There's a lot of traffic lights. Nothing is due north-south or due east-west. It's a lot of moving around. So it's really looking at that broader network impact, doing some of these customer surveys to get pretty much at that point. Is their willingness to pay to drive on a 45-mile-per-hour roadway compared to a 35-mile-per-hour arterial roadway that's maybe 2 miles away that maybe doesn't travel at 35 miles per hour?
Can you talk a little bit more about both the history and the methodology around that kind of survey? I have a vague recollection they actually did a referendum right in Lake County
about 4 years ago.
Yeah. But it was
non-binding.
It was pretty vague and as to what they were asking people. And then has this kind of survey at the more micro level ever been done, either here or any place else? And how reliable is it? I mean, we knew when we, for example, increased tolls that there were a lot of people who said, I'm going to stay off the tollway, I'm never going to come back. And thanks to some diligent reporting, sometimes people have gone back and asked those people and they've said, well, I changed my mind, or some people said, no, I'm still sticking to my guns. But how reliable is that kind of work?
So what it really is, we call it a willingness to pay survey because that kind of puts it into the plain English type terms. What it really is, it's assessing your value of time, asking a series of questions to understand where you begin your trip, where you end your trip, talking to thousands of people. Now we've got an easy way to get out to thousands of people and just fill out some stuff. We have done this before. Understanding where you begin your trip, where you end your trip, how long does it take you to travel? That 15-mile stretch, if it takes you an hour and a half, would you be willing to spend X to save 10 minutes on your trip? Would you be willing to spend X plus to save 20 minutes on your trip or 18 minutes? So it's assessing your for the survey respondents' overall value of time to save that much, whatever that might be. So but it's not going to be, will you pay X to drive on this roadway? It's going to be more of an understanding of who the potential users would be, how they go about traveling from X to Y today, how might they change the travel behaviors based on how they responded to save some time based on your personal expense. So we have done that before. want to say it's common, but if that's how we would approach it. But it would also give us the ability to go back and answer that next question, that the referendum that was passed by Lake County was basically said, do you support Route 53? That was great. I think it was 76% of the people up, or 70% of the people responded yes, that we do support this. But the next question is now, do you support it as a coal facility? So this will kind of get us to that, to the next step. So that's how the surveys typically go. We have done those before, though, with actually some of the congestion pricing work that has been done in the past. And that's how you assess it.
Not a nice question, but we've done it before. Have we ever, based on those results, actually done construction and then seen whether the survey results bear out in what happens with the road?
The stuff that we've done so far, we haven't actually built yet. The work that we've done on this was really on the broader congestion pricing
right.
study that we did for the region, and then also on I-90, so no, this stuff is actually implemented. But it has been done before. They've, you know, the one that always you could point to is what they did in Stockholm, Sweden. You know, they interviewed people prior to, well, I would never do this, you know, kind of where we went at home, and they came back and asked those people afterwards, well, where are you? And they saw people really embraced a lot of the things that were being done there from a transportation perspective, and really flip-flopped around. So.
Which shows that if you do the survey, you should probably ignore it. Or
no, I mean, I do think it informs us. I mean, ultimately, obviously, the official revenue projections and forecasts that we get from our traffic engineer, if we get to that point, have historically been pretty close
mm-hmm.
on, you know, both our system-wides, but also on some of the new facilities. I think they proved to be pretty close on the 355 South extension, right? After this, you know, we've had now several years of operation. So, you know, we've, you know, this is one step, it's the next step, but you're right. There certainly will be people who would say, oh, I will absolutely use it, it's going to be great, and then they won't. And there would certainly probably be people who would say, oh, I would never use it, or I would never support that. And then, you know, once it's available to them, they may. So,
but you want to gauge.
Yeah,
public opinion for the public.
I think that it's important. It is such a new design concept, not only for us but nationally, that, you know, I think it would be irresponsible for us to not go in with eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm. When we do the survey, do we do this based on making an apples for apples comparison? So what if you compare the cost of building an expressway this way compared to the way we built it going south on 355, that differential cost, and there's going to be a cost differential building the way you are. Is that going to be shown in the cost of using it? So would that be passed on to, I mean, if we're going to build a road enhanced like this in this area, is there going to be a premium for running on that road
mm-hmm.
This way?
Well, and that's kind of where we were before. We said, here's the cost of this particular project, $2.3 to $2.7 million for everything that we look at right now. We did a very high-level revenue analysis based on the flat pole, with some of the revenue enhancements that were suggested by the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council. Again, we didn't go into full details on it at that point in time, but the things we'll look at is looking at the indexing, the pricing of it. This was, the envision was that what you would do is have a road, since you've got plenty of demand, it's about 100,000 a day at the end point today, so you've got plenty of demand, but there's going to be constrained supply, so it would lend itself to some form of variable price during the time of day. What you will likely see from this is that during those peak times, when you have no options and you're stuck, either traveling on traffic lights or a free flow corridor that is priced to ensure free flow, people would take it. That's what we're thinking. So what we would look at is the project as itself, not necessarily a comparison of what we built down south. The project is going to have to stand alone to say, here's what we're suggesting, here's what the recommendation is to build. Can one actually do it that way? Does it work? That's part of the other engineering analysis that's going to have to come through this. But then how much does such a roadway finance itself? And that's where the financing gap is really going to, there's going to have to be a concerted effort to really focus on what that gap is and how to close it. And those might be some of the things that have to get brought up of, okay, how do you increase revenues? What other things we're talking about is how do you maybe transition from the existing roadway to a new roadway, and maybe at the south end it's not just a four-lane, 45 mile per hour, maybe it's a little wider there and it tapers down. So there's a lot of things that we did a lot of work in 9 months, but that was taking 50 years worth of stalled progress, crammed it into 9 months. Now we really need to put some more of the meat on the bones to get to those questions that you're asking, not just for you, but for, you know, everybody else too. Let's understand this.
Do we have any engineers' estimates on the premium we would pay for building a road that's enhanced like this?
Those are the things that we're going to get out of this. We did, you know, within the report itself, there were some in the environmental features. We did call out some of those specific items. I don't recall what all those breakdown numbers were, but we did call out the certain items that were being asked of us that were very atypical of a project, and those might be things that where we could look at partnerships to help close those costs, especially on the environmental side. So there was some analysis done. I honestly just don't have the information. There was a lot of numbers were cranked out of the report.
Definitely in the report, we can certainly follow up with it. But again, those were very high level estimates, so this is going to help us refine. But there are definitely some additional costs. Maybe not as much as we all think, but some additional, because it's not a, you know, uncostly thing to build a major roadway like this, but there definitely were some additional costs because of some of these special, you know, features and elements that people thought were necessary to, you know, protect the environment or quality of life or any of the other reasons that people, you know, supported this particular design.
And I think, you know, the Blue Ribbon group up there was, you know, really a balanced group. A lot of interests were balanced in those discussions, and I think that the product was one that, because it was so balanced, ended up coming forward with some unique elements in the design. And now it's our job really to see how that bears out. But I think in many cases they came up with concepts that ultimately could be models across the country. But it is our job now to take a look.
The customer will pay for it.
Yeah, that's right. It's our job to take a look.
Right, and that was a concept that was raised, that these are, you know, special features, special elements. You know, I think that was one of the reasons that some of these additional revenue enhancements were at least, you know, started to be explored. So, you know, clearly there's, you know, the need to explore, you know, further. We're very early in the process, but this is another step. Yeah.
It's important to keep the momentum going, and we've got the buy-in from all the different parties involved, and Rockwood's done a great job in keeping everybody informed and communicating with all the parties and you know, keeping Lake County and CMAP involved in the process of the consultant we're going to review today and bring on board. This is definitely a necessary, you know, mode of transportation we need for Lake County to keep, you know, basically keep up with the growth that's taken over the western part of the county up there. It's vital to the economic development and to the people of the county to keep this moving forward. So I'm happy to see, you know, we're going to be moving forward today with this consultant. So good job.
Is there, you know, Texas A&M just did that study on the cost of congestion in various parts of the country recently. Has there been anything done specifically in Lake County on the cost of congestion because of the lack of a 53 type of roadway in the area?
Sure. Brandy Blankenhorn, the executive director of CMAC, came here, I don't know, a year and a half or so ago when we first started talking about the Route 53 project prior to putting the Blue Ribbon Advisory Council together. And what CMAC has basically found is that there's no project within the region that does more to reduce congestion than the Route 53 project. So they did kind of their own cost of congestion analysis, CMAC did, on the regional project, because there truly are no roads. There's a population of just under a million, I believe it's about 800,000 in Lake County. And if you drive it, the roads all run on angles, nothing north south. So that what the CMAP's analysis has said is this project would be more relief congestion than any other of the regional projects.
So from a cost point of view, but also on a positive impact on the environment, has there been anything like that done as well? I mean, normally the argument against highway expansion is it drives development. Well, the development has occurred, and then there's the need for the road to you know, lessen the impact that things like traffic congestion has on the environment. Has there been like a reverse engineer type?
That's exactly what this land use analysis is going to be done. That's okay. Going to be led by CMAP and Lake County, because it can't just be one agency or one entity moving forward. All of the communities have to buy into this as well. They need to establish and revise their land use plans that they have to acknowledge environmental sensitivities, land use sensitivities that are going to be associated with this roadway. Everybody, basically what happened through there, everybody planned for this mega roadway coming through and building out on every piece of their available land. So the land use plans collectively it was never going to happen.
So everybody planned for the maximum happening in their community, which obviously we know that's not the way development necessarily happens. You look, you know, across communities and it's balanced one place or the other. So this, I think, also will help to inform, you know, we're hoping that done at the same time, you know, the information can be traded back and forth and can help inform, you know, some of the work that we're doing with our consultant.
Correct.
And what's the schedule on that?
18 months, same thing. They're going to be starting sometime this May.
Okay.
So right about, so we'll be doing things concurrently with them, so there's going to be a lot of working side by side. So obviously has to be done together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else, Christine? Or is that it?
I don't think there's anything else from my perspective. Thank you very much.
Finance, we have two items today. Mike.
Thank you. First item is approval of the 2002 retiree health insurance payment to the Illinois Department of Central Management Services. Retirees of the tollway are eligible for health benefits through programs that are administered by the Department of Central Management Services. Pursuant to state statutes, the tollway is obligated to reimburse the state annually for their prorated share of those cost of those benefits. We determine that by, on a monthly basis, we receive a listing of all of the enrollees that receive benefits from the State Employees Retirement System. We review that information on the report and populate the actual service time that those enrollees have at the tollway and determine what our share of the premium would be for those retirees. These reports totals are sent to CMS for their approval, and then we accrue the expense throughout the year. At the end of the year, then we're billed for the entire amount of the expense that has accrued over that 12-month period. So this this request is to make payment to the state, to Central Management Services for these benefits for tollway retirees in the amount of $5,047,848.26. And it reflects a cost that we have incurred and accrued during 2012.
Michael saw a 16% increase from 2011 to 2012. Is that based on the number of retirees or by the legislation that was passed out in Springfield regarding the contributions?
Hey, Mark, I looked at it a little differently. From 09, the per-person cost has gone up 16% to 12. If you divide the gross dollar by the number of employees served. So it really hasn't increased that much in the year. The bulk number has, but the per-person has.
Per-person, yeah.
We did have, you know, between 2009 and 2012, actually between 2009 and 2011, because of our change to electronic tolling, there were a larger... an atypically large number of retirees as we started to downsize the manual collection group in the field in terms of reducing positions where we had less activity, less manual collection activity.
Mike, quick question. What's going to happen in 14 with the new changing healthcare here? Our country, is that going to affect us dramatically? Have we looked at that yet? I mean, it's early this year, but it's coming quick.
We have looked at that. I'll let John.
I know it's off the subject, but
risk insurance manager speak a little.
Yeah, we've already started planning for the changes that the Affordable Care Act is going to put in. We're really not. Our programs are not such that we anticipate a big change in them. The question is how there's going to be the cost. For example, as of January 1st of next year, there will be a tax that we'll have to pay, and that'll help offset the cost of the federal program that's going to be in place. It's an annual cost. It's, I think, $65 per person per year, but it's still additional cost. the interesting thing will be to see not only how it impacts us, but the retirees. That's going to be the other thing, because I don't know what the state has anticipated. The law that the director talked about has not been implemented in the state of Illinois yet. I think they're still negotiating with the union on that particular part of it, and so they haven't adjusted the cost for the individual retirees. But at this point, director, it's anybody's guess. Everyone's studying. If you ask this consultant, he'll tell you this thing. If you ask that consultant, he'll tell you another thing. What we're doing is working. The good thing is we have Blue Cross Blue Shield as our partner in this, and we're working with them to try to figure out how to best provide for the benefit program for our employees and their families.
Do you have any employees that would fall under the threshold for the ability to go into the exchange?
No, we don't think so.
No.
As of right now.
I think it's a family of four, $93,000 a year?
Yeah, yeah.
And if they do, then you have to pay a penalty, right?
If they choose to do it.
They choose. Do you have to pay the penalty, though, for your whole workforce as well, if one person
does? If one person goes in, you could. But we don't think so, because in looking, you have to go for the bronze thing. And I think our benefit program, I don't know why they go there, because they'd have to pay for it and everything else. Whereas in our evaluation today, we think our benefit programs exceed what you get as a hit in the bronze.
It all depends on the level of the compensation, too, as well.
Correct. Yes. Yes. Director, we think that's going to change. I don't think that's set in stone.
You mean the level?
I hope you're right.
Because there's a lot of, because there just doesn't seem to be, I mean, that particular provision about the fees, because there's no rules. The rules are not put out. That's what I'm saying. I think that's going to change. As they've changed other rules as they go along.
The penalty is $5,000 a year?
I think it's two.
It's two plus five, then, if you don't.
Right.
Two is adequate, five is...
The other thing is the... Is
so the total is five.
The cost to the person, you know, I think it would make a difference if our contribution was very high. In other words, if we didn't pay for dependents, we didn't do that.
Right.
I think that's the ones that will go over. You also have that problem of the cost being over 9.5% of their income. That can also... 9.5% of their income, as far as the cost of contribution, and none of our contributions get anywhere close to that particular level.
Any other questions? Okay. Item number two.
Item number two, I think we would like to, we're not asking that this be moved to the consent agenda today. There's some modifications to this item that we'd like to make and present to the full board next week. But I would like to take a few minutes to speak to this issue, if you don't mind.
Sure.
A couple of months ago, we laid out our debt management plan, or our bond issuance plan for the year. Included in that plan was the issuance of approximately $1 billion in new money. We've authorized that $1 billion of new money to help fund the capital program, and we named the first team for the first issue that we will do in the next 6 to 8 weeks or so. We're already working on that transaction. The team was named. Secondly, we also authorized, have discussed a refunding or restructuring of our synthetic fixed rate debt. We also have a team named that can handle that transaction, and the current plan would be, as we are able to kind of move forward with the new money, then we'd have an opportunity to look at the refunding or restructuring of synthetic fixed rate debt. Other actions that we've taken so far also include replacing or extending expiring bank agreements that we have with some of our variable rate bonds, and we're working on that as well. This is really the fourth item that we discussed in that plan a couple of months ago. This is to refund previously issued fixed rate bonds that were used to finance the congestion relief program. These bonds were issued in 2005 and 2006, and they currently carry interest coupons of 5%, and I guess there's one maturity that's 4 1/8, but the rest of them are all 5% coupons, and these bonds are callable for the 2005 series
are callable July 1.